Hi, I'm Julian McKenzie, and this is the Album of the Decade podcast. We've had so much great music come in the last few years, so this is the show where you get to hear people talk about their favorite albums and projects of that time. This episode features Lucius P. Thundercat. He's a rapper and songwriter who's done songs with OG Mako, Raven Justice, and Sky Zoo. Lucius's pick for Album of the Decade is My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy by Kanye West.
I love it though, you know? Put your hands to the constellations. The way you look should be a sin. You my sensation. I know I'm preaching to the congregation. We love Jesus, but you done learned a lot from Satan.
Here we are with our latest episode, Lucius P. Thundercat.
Lucius P. Thundercat, a.k.a. 9-5 Thriller, a.k.a. Because if I Jackie, she off your running left it white, Agony Daddy, a.k.a. Gang Gang LaFleur, a.k.a. LPT Perrier World, RIP Juice, and we're here.
Shout out. I'm really glad I got to do this episode with you, man, because, like, we talk about music
all the time.
All the time. On the bus, at a bar, at different party. Like, I'm trying to think of all these different places where, like, we talk about albums and talk about music. So it's just natural that we would come together for a podcast to discuss albums of, I mean, our this particular choice for Album of the Decade.
I feel like this started from when I first met you.
Yeah.
And it was like,
it was almost a decade ago.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Time passes fast. And I was like, this guy knows music a lot more than most of the people that I'm talking to about music currently.
That's a high compliment. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Back then, I guess going to a French school too, you were going to English school, so
maybe it's
a different
exactly.
experience.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of, yo, ya le nega Frenchie, ya chinks, moga, waka flaka flim. I enjoyed their music too.
Yeah.
But when I'm like, nah, you got to listen to this random T-Pain unreleased Silver and Gold song, no one else could relate to that.
That's it. You put me on a lot of music. Remember Black Milk?
Yo, Black Milk. Remember that? Did you come? You did a show with me?
No, I was supposed to, but I don't think I ended up going.
You missed out. Yeah, live band and everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the only CDs I own because CDs are kind of dead, pretty much.
Yeah,
I've never played the CDs because I have nothing to play them in, but I bought them to support
Black Milk.
Yeah,
that's pretty epic.
It was a $10 ticket. I wasn't gonna not buy it. I even told him when I was there. I was like, "Yo, I bootlegged your shit."
And I'm sorry about that. You told him
shit. Yeah, I was like, "Yo," I was like, "I don't pay for music, bro."
Oh, okay.
But
what's the last I wanted time you to paid, support. What's the last time you paid for music?
I bought my own song because I
what?
No, this sounds wild. It's because I needed to insert it into a video editing app.
Okay.
And the format that I had it on my phone, because my laptop wasn't working.
Oh my god.
Did not allow for me to transfer it onto the app.
So you had to buy your own music, and because it was in the file format you needed.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
man.
I got 70% of it back, so it's not the worst. I paid 30 cents for my song.
What is the latest going on with your musical projects now?
I kind of decided to slow down on projects, and it's just been released in singles. You know, I'm still pushing tempo, almost at 30k. I need everyone to keep supporting that. But yeah, no, it's pretty much gonna be singles. I have something coming in January. I've played it for You Next Man.
Mm-hmm.
Got that singer on there.
Mm.
And that's gonna be what I'm pushing for the start of the year.
Why is your name Lucius P. Thundercat?
I was like, I can name myself whatever I want. I'm just gonna name myself something random as shit. And the first thing that came to mind was Lucius P. Thundercat. I've never figured out what the P stood for, but I just let people.
So to this day, P doesn't stand for nothing.
No, it stands for everything. That's the thing. It's undefinable. That was some smooth shit, wasn't it?
That is very smooth.
Undefinable.
You know what album to me feels a little undefinable, even though it could be classified as hip hop? The album we're going to talk about today.
Ooh, that segue.
Hey,
yo,
see what I did there?
It's almost as if you do this.
Almost.
Yo.
So like, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, I think if I was in your seat right now,
mm-hmm.
and I had to come up with a pick for this podcast, I would be deciding between this album and Kendrick's To Pimp a Butterfly. Yes. But I want... Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's fine. I fully cut you off.
I
was actually deciding between Kanye and Kendrick, too, but it was more for Good Kid, Mad City.
Okay. I feel like a lot of people love that record, and I like it a lot too, but I don't feel the same way about it like I do with To Pimp.
Why is that?
Because I guess because To Pimp a Butterfly struck me with its themes and the music they used underneath Kendrick's lyrics. And unlike Good Kid, Mad City, where you had so like an overwhelming amount of people behind the album, behind a lot of the singles. Like if you hear like Mad City now, like, you know, people will still love it. I felt really, it was really interesting to see people be like, oh, I didn't like To Pimp a Butterfly. It wasn't like Good Kid, Mad City. Almost everyone would say it that way. But I guess it's just because I felt it on a different level from other people. That's probably why I like it so much. And I also think like To Pimp a Butterfly was probably more for like people like me and people like you and people, you know, around the time it was coming out, like Black Lives Matter was the big thing. And that's how All Right ended up being the unofficial anthem for it too.
And that was the
peak. So like pro-black. Like that I can understand why a lot of masses didn't really vibe with it.
That was the peak of your black self-love, wasn't it? You felt right, huh? Melanin magic started popping up, and it was just like,
well, no, I love
off to the races. No, well, yes.
Oh yeah, we all.
But there was a soundtrack to it.
There was a soundtrack to it.
I like that album too. I love it a lot.
Yeah.
But I think Good Kid, Mad City hit me at a point.
Yeah.
Where I was like, ooh, I like rapping.
Yeah.
I don't think I liked rapping before. Before it was just whatever was out. You know, Party Like a Rock Star. Shake That Laffy Taffy, which is a classic song.
Wow.
Don't take that. Yeah, that chuckle as disrespect.
Don't at Lucius for this.
Because I love Laffy Taffy. And Shawty Low, that verse.
Rest in peace.
Flawless verse.
Rest in peace. Shawty Low.
Is he?
Yeah, he died. Shawty Low died. Shawty Low died in 2016. I think he died the same year almost all those celebrities died.
Damn.
That like bloodshed of a year.
I remember like that. Like Prince. But I forgot that too.
Yeah. But yeah, I think with Kendrick, he was so good at, you know,
words.
Yeah, he still is. Mm-hmm. And that's why that album, To Pimp a Butterfly, was considered alongside My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, where that was rap, so to speak, just kind of at like a higher echelon. Yeah. It just kind of sounded more lavish. And I mean, and we know, we get it. There's a theme of rappers rapping about chains or you know, and having a whole bunch of wealth, but there was something different about how this was presented. It felt kind of like high class rap, and just kind of how it sounded.
I mean, I like the diamonds and watches and chains too.
I get it, you know, like, hey, get you a watch, get you all that, but like there's something different. This, the way it was packaged, everything about My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, the short film that came out with it, him running through the forest, coming across that phoenix. I live with it. Like that was
imagery.
That was unlike something I had ever like. Older generations have Thriller, right? Where they have the short film music video that's 30 minutes. It stands the test of time. Runaway was the closest thing we have to it. I'm not saying it's on the same level, but like someone to go out of their way to do a massive production, unveil an album next to it. I don't know. I can't think of anyone who really tried to go out of their way to try to produce something on that same level as MJ did.
At that time, yeah, not for sure. No.
But
speaking of Runaway, when he did it at the VMAs.
Yeah. That was one of the most epic things I had ever seen.
The MIDI player.
Yes.
Just, I don't know.
It
was beautiful.
It was, I'm telling you, that performance in itself was one of the... That it was one of the most epic things I had ever seen. I remember watching that live and just thinking, this is a crazy song.
I think that was the peak of people appreciating egotistical Kanye.
Yes.
Before it became slight disdain and then furthermore heavier disdain.
That's it. I think you outlined that perfectly. Because now we're in a position where we see Kanye dressed all in silver. We see Kanye West. Yeah, Silver Surfer in the flesh.
I respect it.
Yeah. We see him do that. We see him speak glowingly of Donald Trump. We see his Sunday services and people just kind of groan or gag now. But in 2010, early 2011, while some people were very, you know, taken aback, people still had the whole Taylor Swift thing on their minds, which I believe was...
I think it was close to that time.
It was close to that time. there was still a legion of Kanye fans and just general music fans in particular who saw Kanye as this game-changing artist who was trying to just be more than what people were trying to perceive him to be as. He was someone who was trying to push the boundaries of the genre he was in, and an album like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy was the perfect way to show that off. You have all these musical talents in a Jay-Z, in a Rick Ross, Nicki Minaj, and we'll get to a whole bunch of these tracks later. But like, you had all these talents who were coming together and made this amazing, wondrous album that you can still play today. And I still think it's the apex of Kanye's genius.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the way I feel about Kanye is the negative and positive traits that he's been displaying now have always been there.
Absolutely.
It's just the subject that he's focused on has changed. And so I would find it hypocritical of myself to be like, oh, now I can't rock with it. Because this is who you were.
Yeah.
And also, I don't expect anything from my artist but artistry. I don't need you to put a message in anything you do, anything you say or think outside of the music or even in the music does not affect how I think and feel. And so I'm perfectly fine with it. I don't support everything he says, mind you. But that I can separate that from my appreciation of the music.
Okay. So with this album, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy,
yes.
Do you remember what the album was supposed to be called?
No, I didn't. Oh, was it Good Ass Job?
Yes. That's what it was supposed to be months before.
Because that was during the Fridays.
Yeah.
Good Fridays.
And that's when he still had he still kind of features the bear, but I feel like it was still kind of in that era.
Yeah.
And this was kind of like the last. Actually, I don't even remember if the bear features prominently in any of the art for this. I just feel like this
is a departure. Not on the cover art, but what happened to that bear? Did the bear die?
I don't know.
Like, it's a cartoon bear, but.
Yeah, but I guess I just feel as if once we entered this decade, it's just Kanye just decided, all right, we're just going to put that to the side.
Can he no longer identify with the bear?
Maybe that's it. Because I when I think of the bear, I think of Kanye in school. And remember those first few albums with College Dropout, Late Registration, and Graduation. The bear identified closely with those themes of just someone just trying to find their way through the educational system before eventually dropping out and trying to just prove to everybody else that, you know what, I don't need these degrees to keep me warm and all that. I can just go out of my way to just be the best artist I could be. But My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, that just throws all that out the window and says, I'm not a rapper, I'm an artist.
This is who the fuck I am.
This is artistry.
Exactly.
And like, when you hear the opening notes of Dark Fantasy and you hear Nicki Minaj put on this British accent, that's when you think, okay, this is, we're going on a journey right now.
It threw me off a little bit,
but I was like, all right, I kind of want to see where this goes. And the song ends up slapping Dark Fantasy.
Can we get much higher?
Yeah.
We certainly can.
Seriously, like, yes, we can. Absolutely.
I remember she was doing that a lot around that time, the fake British accent. It was not for me. But on that song, it just kind of worked. It set a stage, and I was just ready to vibe up.
The craziest thing about this album, and Nicki benefits from this, this is also, in my opinion, like we get the best of
everybody.
Everybody. Like Nicki Minaj on Monster. Think about it. Could you imagine a situation where you have a track with Kanye, a track with Jay-Z, a track with Rick Ross in the first few seconds, but even he would, you know, it's Rick Ross. And you are this relative newcomer to the mainstream world to be on a track with some heavyweights, no pun intended, with Rick Ross. But like,
I see what you did there.
But like, not only do you hold your own, you produce arguably the greatest verse of your career.
Yeah.
Nicki Minaj, I get it. Outstanding rap artist.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a better better verse than what she had on Monster.
A single verse, no. But I do feel like the people who say that about Nicki Minaj don't necessarily listen to that much Nicki Minaj.
Okay, that's fair. I don't listen to an overwhelming amount of Nicki Minaj.
You might hear her on a Wayne feature or a Drake feature, or her random radio singles that like popped up and got really big, like Starships and stuff like that.
But yeah, those were pop records in terms of her actually delivering on a rap verse.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it gets any better than what she did on, and I mean, it doesn't really get that much better than what she did on Monster. And when you really think about it, like her being better than a Jay-Z verse.
Oh yeah, Jay-Z had that.
Like
he had that Monster Mash shit going on. Where it was like ghosts and goblins.
Ooh, yeah.
Spooky shit. Like, no. Yeah.
What do all of these things have in common? I am a monster. Like, all right, fine. That was like, a bit of.
We love Jay-Z.
You disrespectful for Monster Mash.
So we went along with it because Jay-Z is dope. And
yeah.
The way he delivers things is dope. But like, when you stop and think about it.
Yeah, you're kind of just all like, all
that
right.
That was not it.
That was a lot of random boxes.
The rest of the verse was dope.
Oh my God.
But how it started was like.
Yeah, it was a little weird. But Nicki Minaj delivers on that song. And continuing with that theme of artists giving their best, Rick Ross, who I mentioned earlier, his greatest verse, in my opinion, is on Devil in a New Dress. That's his greatest verse.
I might put it top five.
That's his greatest verse.
Damn.
He comes in
strong words.
No, that's seriously. Rick Ross is at his best when you have like a horn or a violin or some kind of orchestral music behind him.
Instrumentation. Just
instrumentation. And if you have to add like some kind of trap beat or some kind of percussion in there, all right, you got to do it. But Rick Ross, when that beat is rousing and it is doing its thing, he is the man on that. And it is never any better than it is on Devil in a New Dress. That, I think, like,
I want to say Foreclosures was probably up there for me. People slept on the Black Market album. That was the one that sold like barely anything compared to what he normally does.
Mm-hmm.
But that album had some rapping on there. And yeah, Rick Ross will give you the same two flows forever. But he's perfected those two flows.
He's good at those two flows.
And they're like, I take those two flows over everyone else's for the most part.
Well, you know who else has been consistent for pretty much the better part of the decade in terms of the subject matter that they'll give you, and into some ways their flows as well. And also ended up delivering the best of himself, and it kind of laid a platform for this decade is Pusha T.
Oh, I know where you're going with that.
Well, that's it. Like Pusha T, he is going to rap about drugs. He is going to rap about everything. Cocaine.
I remember when Jesus Is King was coming out, and we saw that Pusha was on the track list.
Yeah,
and it's like, what is he gonna say?
He's gonna say anything different?
That's not cocaine, you know.
He's not gonna say anything different.
Man, listen. I carry 10 bricks like commandments. Yuck.
Like,
you know?
But that's what we're going to get for Pusha.
That's what I wanted, though.
But that's honestly it. He's good at what he does. But the beginning of people truly appreciating Pusha for the solo talent that he is, it starts at My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. Yes. It starts there. When he came on for that performance with Kanye at the MTV Awards. That was like, holy
like
crap.
This is the guy.
Pusha T?
That's the guy right there.
From the clips?
From grinding? From hey. I remember when we were like, yo, that was high school?
Oh,
no, that was elementary school.
Elementary school.
Banging on the desks. Hey, I'm your Pusha.
Like, come on. You weren't like a real one if you weren't trying to do that beat.
Mm.
Like a desk or something. But seriously, like those artists. And Bon Iver. Everyone started to figure out who Bon Iver was.
I still don't know.
And some people still don't, but Bon Iver ended up being a thing because of this album.
He was on.
He's on Monster. He's on Lost in the World.
Lost in the World was
but like he has influence.
I enjoy Lost in the World. It is not my favorite song on the album.
It's not my favorite song on the album, but I appreciate it as a closer combined with Who Will Survive in America, where you hear Gil Scott-Heron's voice. I mentioned Kid Cudi and Raekwon.
I think I was too young to appreciate Who Will Survive in America when I first heard the album. Mm-hmm. Hearing it now, and I realized that kind of happens with a lot of albums, that back then when I wasn't really listening to the words, it was more how things knocked and how people were flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, that's important.
Absolutely matters. The content. I mean, we do, especially in this decade, I feel we've put so much of an emphasis on how things knock and how beats sound.
Mm-hmm.
Content and what's written inside, what's said, should always matter.
I wouldn't say always.
It should matter to a certain extent.
It should matter from the people who are saying that they're pushing content.
Yes.
If you have the self-awareness to know and state that there isn't substance behind what you're saying necessarily, but the goal is just fun and enjoyment, I have no problem with that.
That's true.
But if you're acting like you're deep or purporting to be deep,
yeah, then it's like, all right, well,
we see through you.
Yeah, there are some people like that. Mm. You know what song we didn't talk about at all?
Which one?
All of the Lights.
Ooh,
that is like
every single person.
That's like the Avengers of rap music.
That is We Are the World 25.
Yeah, that's pretty much. Do you remember every single artist that played some kind of role?
Okay, I'm going to try it. I'm going to see who I got.
Let's see if you could
point out. You got Elton John.
Yes.
You got Rihanna.
Yes.
You got Fergie.
Yes.
You got Kanye, of course.
Yes.
I want to say Kid Cudi's on there.
Yes.
I want to say John Legend.
Yes. I mean, there's like one other. There's like two artists who I expect you to get. There's one person who I remember had a verse on an earlier version of the song, but I don't think they're really on it anymore. But
Alicia Keys?
Alicia Keys is on it.
Yes.
But there's one artist who are they credited for this? I know they had a verse on the earlier edition of this song, but I don't think they have any credits on it. Oh, actually they say they do, which is weird. Drake. Drake had a verse for All of the Lights.
I've never heard that.
You've never heard it?
I've never heard
that. It's like very short.
How is it though?
There was a reason why it's not on the album.
I don't think
it's not like it doesn't really add anything.
I didn't appreciate Drake back then.
Well, because Drake in the early 2010s was still kind of coming into his own, mm-hmm. and he hadn't. And while he was good at putting out little sappy songs, I don't know, the Drake that we see now is much different than the Drake we had in 2011 and 2012, who was still finding his own way and still just, I don't think we were really sure if he was going to really stick in the cultural zeitgeist. And now he's like the most streamed.
He's the guy.
He's this most streamed artist of the decade.
Well deserved.
I mean, could you imagine a guy who puts out lyrics that could easily be captioned on Instagram? Like he found a way to make it work. He found a way to put out music that thousands and millions upon millions of people would listen to.
Exactly.
From a musical standpoint, he deserves that respect, I guess.
And it's good music, too. People try to act like making accessible music is somehow corny, but you need to make things for everyone. Yeah. Not a single person, necessarily, but there has to be stuff there for everybody. So if someone can come in and grab a solid four different areas of music and take a strong commanding lead there,
mm-hmm.
I would be foolish to not respect it. Dancehall?
Yeah.
Afro beats?
Yes.
R&B?
Yes.
Rap?
Yes.
I think that's where I'm going to leave it for now. Unless he comes with his own Jesus is King.
What would we do? Well, ooh. That would be... Well, considering that he's Jewish, I don't think he'd necessarily do a Jesus is King, would he?
Yahweh is King? Wait, I don't know. Is he allowed to be Jewish?
Well, he's allowed to be
Jewish. No, I mean, in terms I think...
Well, his mom is Jewish.
Yeah, I think it's related to the dad.
It's his mom. It's the mother.
Okay, is it...
In any case, I don't even know if he would even want to go so deep as to do that. But then again, I'm not Drake.
But I guess if you go in terms of Abrahamic religions.
I don't even want to jump
into this whole thing. I'm just saying, it would all be...
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's all he under can still the make same it. Thing. Yeah, he could.
I want it now. Now that I've thought about the idea, not a whole album. I just want one gospel song from Drake.
I feel like a Drake gospel song...
40 produce it.
Yes. I would love it if it was a situation where Drake and Kanye ended whatever beef they had and they came together and forgave each other on the record, and then that would be the closest thing.
That would be powerful, but I also want more of a him and Party Next Door do a Donnie McClurkin style Caribbean medley. Jesus name so sweet. Yo. Emmanuel name so sweet, you know?
Yo, they sample Mr. Vegas, I Am Blessed.
Ooh. All these things have to happen now because...
Yo, 2020s. 2020s are going to be lit.
A whole new decade, a Yo. Whole new... People trying to find the new sounds.
Ooh.
And to be fair, Jesus is King sold a lot. I think it's the second highest selling album of this year.
I still have my thoughts about how that album was put out and how Kanye is as a person now, and I'm not while it could easily be seen as a full circle thing, I still just feel it's a bit disingenuous.
I don't. It could be.
It totally could be to me.
I don't know if that matters to all the people who
streamed it and listened to it, and that's their prerogative. But like the fact that we've gone from an album which is being it's just been heralded by so many people as arguably the greatest of the decade in My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, and how he's gone to this point with Jesus is King, where the production's still there, but it's not nearly as iconic as it was on MBDTF. The lyrics have dropped off significantly, but he's still making a lot of money.
Yeah, honestly, the lyrics on Jesus King weren't what I necessarily wanted.
But we've seen there's a decline in his lyricism over the decade.
But I don't know if... Yes, but I don't know if I would attribute Jesus is King
that drop. Oh, I'm not saying Jesus King is the reason for that drop. I'm saying it's gotten to that point where you can look at one point in the spectrum and you go to now, and you can clearly see along the metaphorical graph I am showing that I can't show because you're listening on audio, that the lyrics have gone down to this point.
That makes sense, but I also see it more for that album specifically as maybe him not knowing how to go about talking about certain things.
I agree.
Especially considering the subject matter that came before.
I agree.
It's kind of like when you hear Pusha T make a song for the ladies versus when he makes songs about cocaine.
Yeah.
Even though the song for the ladies is about cocaine too.
Yeah, that's it. It's all I got someone else who will help me push it or whatever he wants to do.
But your handle of the subject matter is a lot different.
Do you have a pick for best song on this album?
I kind of waffle between Gorgeous and
with Raekwon.
Raekwon the chef, who is the king of being on someone's song and in no way rapping about what they're rapping about.
Even the production changes when he starts rapping on his
even matter. He is saying the dopest stuff in life, but it has nothing to do with the song.
It has nothing to do with that song.
I remember. Was it Oxymoron?
Schoolboy Q
was rapping about how he was struggling with his faith. And Raekwon comes in with the verse, "Ayo, tuna fish sandwiches, bread." And it sounded like the hardest thing in life. And in the verse, I don't think he in any way touched religion. But it went.
Hey, tuna fish sandwiches with the bread.
And I love Raekwon for it.
Hey.
Only built for Cuban links.
That's Raekwon delivers one of the better, if not, I don't know if it's the best guest verse on the album, but Gorgeous has slept on a little bit.
I would say Rick Ross on Devil in a New Dress is probably
the best. I think best it's the best one on there, best guest verse.
And then the other song that I was kind of waffling through was Blame Game.
That is also an underrated album cut.
I love Blame Game.
And then the Chris Rock
talking for a solid 3 minutes, Yeezy taught me.
Yeah. Man. I was like, whoa, that was so different.
You don't get that kind of Chris Rock on albums anymore. I think the last one was Rather You Than Me.
Yeah, he was up on Rick Ross's album.
On the song where he was dissing Birdman?
Yes.
But
Thank you for acknowledging it's a song where he disses Birdman, because we've disputed this.
What's there to dispute?
He dissed Birdman.
Who's saying that he didn't?
I thought I remember we had a whole conversation about this. I'm like, this is a diss. This is like a diss track.
Not I. I'll tell you that much. It is so clear cut.
It's blatant. It's super blatant. Even at the end of the song, he just stunner. I was like, all right, well, if you didn't know who this song was about, it's about him.
A hard ass song. I'm pretty sure in the beginning of the video, he was watching the pop bottles video on a TV and took a baseball bat to the TV.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It was one of those situations. But Chris Rock was talking his shit.
Yes.
John Legend. I feel like that might be the first time I ever heard John Legend curse, and it threw me off.
Yes. Yes. I was like, whoa. You do that?
I was like, language, sir. Like,
John, what happened about ordinary people?
That's where I was going with it. Like,
yo.
It just shocked me, but it worked.
We didn't talk about So Appalled. You know who had the best verse on that song?
Sia?
Yes.
Sia is amazing.
But that's I think for Rick Ross and Nicki Minaj, I know I mentioned them saying they have their best verses and all that. and they've gone on to put out plenty of other projects. But around 2010, Sci-Hi was trying to build a name for himself, and he ended up having tapes in and around that album, but that's kind of like his peak as an artist. I don't think I'm off base. I don't think I'm off base saying Sci-Hi's verse on So Appalled is the peak of his
in of his terms career. Of impact, yes.
And impact and popularity.
Popularity. But in terms
if God of God had an iPod, I'd be on his playlist.
In terms of quality, he put out these Black History projects.
Yes.
And he named the songs after important figures. And that was an amazing project.
And they didn't sell nearly, or they didn't necessarily bring up his profile.
It was a mixtape.
Yes.
That's the problem with the Dat Piff era, where a whole bunch of quality stuff is never going to make it to streaming. And it's wildly disappointing to me.
Absolutely.
But also sample clearances and all that.
Yeah, that's a whole problem in itself.
Yeah. Making music was the Wild West back then.
Yeah. Now we're exiting the SoundCloud generation, but that's a whole other thing in itself.
I missed the SoundCloud generation.
Yeah.
I never got into it. I feel like I only heard of the artists once they started bubbling over to YouTube, you know, that's the X's, the Juice WRLDs, RIP.
Yeah. Man. Like, we're at a point where, like, I might see them on Instagram doing something. Like, I didn't get a chance to be all like, oh, wow, like, let me follow this artist's progression through SoundCloud.
Mm-hmm.
But, But I mean, we were well before that. Like, even My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, where you start hearing songs that could be on the album come out before the album dropped. Like, you're hearing it on Dat Piff, or you're hearing it on Hot New Hip Hop. You're hearing it on these random sites where you could still were downloading music.
Yeah.
For free 99 was still a common thing.
I think Dat Piff made a lot of money off these artists. There's not too much talking about that, but when you really boil it down, it's craziness.
With this album, if you were on an island and you could only play one album during the time you're there, I guess before you're rescued, would you bring this album with you?
No. Because I think I can separate something that I thoroughly enjoy versus something that makes me happy. And if I'm stuck on an island, I need something to forget about the fact. Either forget that I'm on the island, or make me appreciate the island like some Flo Rida, you know?
Pitbull's Greatest Hits?
Pitbull's Greatest Hits, which is a top 3 compilation album all time.
We have it here on Wax now.
I will say it forever. The second one, not the original hits, but the greatest hits. If you have a Michael Jackson's Greatest Hits somewhere, that's up top. Lionel Richie.
Lionel Richie?
Or Marvin Gaye.
Wow.
And then you got Pitbull.
You have those three. Oh, man.
Okay. People don't put enough respect on Pitbull's name.
I mean,
he's the guy.
I always feel like we should easily do a second episode where, like, you talk about how great the compilation album is.
It's the best thing in life.
Oh, my God.
Anybody listening to this needs to listen to the second. Not the first. The first, I think, is back when he was still on his rap stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the second one, amazing. It'll take you back to your childhood. It's beautiful.
Yeah, if you hear Give Me Everything, that takes you all the way back
him and
to
Neo,
high school party.
That was the peak of So You Think You Can Dance. I don't know if that show is still on, because I don't watch Never TV anymore.
I don't know if it is.
Back then, American Idols, Dancing with the Stars, So You Think You Can Dance, that was the peak of music-based reality shows.
We still have, like, The Voice.
I don't know if they're as impactful.
Maybe not. That's true.
I don't.
Like, care. Artists who come out from there, you don't expect them to be like, oh, wow, they're the biggest thing now. They just have their one song on iTunes, and then that's it. Like, when Kelly Clarkson won American Idol, it was
because, like, she was the first.
She was the first one.
And now,
like, wow,
she's still building. She has a show, I think. Like radio or TV.
She has a TV show now. Oh, she's built herself into a spectacular career.
But if you won a singing competition now, I don't know if your profile is going to be raised to that degree.
No.
There's too much music.
You may still be looking for a record deal after the fact.
No, I think I would have to assume that they would give them one with the show.
I guess if you win. Even then, like, it may be a weird situation. Who knows? But you're right. The profile is not the same.
It's not going to slap harder than Kidz Bop, you know?
Wow.
That's probably the most impactful.
Wild.
If you think about it.
That's wild. You think being... So what? Like, if I was a singer, I should might as well just sell myself to Kidz Bop? just make myself sound like a 16-year-old?
No, that's creepy. But I think it's a more of a situation where you know you've made it once you're on a Kids Bop project.
And what kids do you know off Kids Bop?
You don't know the kids, but you know the brand is stronger than the individual kids because it can't be the same kids. Because it's been Kids Bop for like 14 years, I want to say.
Yeah, no way.
But, and it's weird, I guess, because we're in a generation where hip-hop is the most important genre.
That's it. Rap became the new, rap is the new rock stars.
And seeing them try to take on Kids Bop versions of those songs, like, I wonder how that's going to work.
Could you imagine a Kids Bop version of
Shug?
Like, no way.
But these are the best songs. These are the number one songs, at least.
Yeah.
I want to hear the Kids Bop version of No Guidance or Truth Hurts. It has to happen because either you're going to ignore
Truth Hurts is probably more likely.
Either you're going to ignore the hits and you're basically ignoring the culture,
yeah,
which is dominant at this moment, or exactly. You're just going to acquiesce and have to struggle and make those songs G-rated. Or
a Kids Bop version of Shug would be really funny.
Amazing. I want the video.
And again, to segue back to the album, one of the biggest reasons why the hip-hop culture is so dominant now can go back to how successful
Beautiful Dark Twisted
this album is. See, even if we stray from the path that we have been set on here, it always goes back to My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
It is inspirational.
And influential.
You don't get... Well, the problem with it being influential is because it's not a sustainable way of making music now because of how hard it is to clear samples. So no matter how influential it could be, it's always limited by the fact that not everyone has the funds or means to make an album.
But should that only be tied to sampling songs for it to sound a certain way for influence? Because one of the biggest reasons why and this album carries on the influence that it does is more for, I guess, how it was packaged and seen and the songs that were done. Yes, there were samples on all of these, but is that why people say it's influential?
Not necessarily.
That's more of an attribute to Kanye, less so than the album.
I was talking more in terms of the music, but how it influenced the culture. I could see that for sure.
Because I think like Kanye as a guy has been sampling since ever. Mm-hmm. That's something that could be attributed to him, less so. And not necessarily just like, oh, well, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy got everyone to sample. He's been sampling since like College Dropout.
My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy got people to realize that they can't sample like Kanye.
Yeah. So I think I could agree with that
point. And that is when we got back to the trap beats.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that point. I'm trying to think of like all, like the samples on the album here. 21st Century Schizoid Man on Power. Aphex Twin on Blame Game. Gil Scott-Heron on Who Will Survive in America. Trying to think of all the other samples on this record. It's they're just put together and packaged so well. Mm-hmm. Amazingly well.
And it's more of what I want, but it's a shame knowing that I can never get that again. It's kind of sad. Also, even from Kanye, I don't think we're ever going to get something that can, not in terms of the sonics of the project, but more, I don't know, the feeling.
Yeah. The way it kind of was done. And I even think of the process where Kanye got all those different artists to like meet in this like one area. I mean, yeah, fine. There's the Wyoming projects and all that. But there's something special with how they were able to get all those different artists to come together and put together this album that should also be mentioned and should not be understated. I don't know. This was a magical time for Kanye. I don't think it'll ever get any better than what it is, but...
But it still needs to be appreciated.
Absolutely.
And not dismissed due to non-music-related actions.
I don't think we'll ever let it get to that point, because I think so. People appreciated it so much. And the people who love Kanye West, even if they wrestle on a day-to-day basis with things that he says or things that he does, it comes from a place of having been passionate and loving towards this artist for as long as they have.
But I do feel like I hear people say, I can't listen to Kanye anymore.
And it's hard to.
It works.
It's hard. And you could say it, but like I've at different points said that, but like I break.
It just...
Because you kind of can't.
Because the music was so good.
It's still good.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And
you could say you might not want to listen to a certain era, but like...
I don't have to listen to you talk to enjoy your music.
Yeah. And I'm not going to stop listening to College Dropout. I'm not going to stop listening to Late Registration, Graduation, 808s and Heartbreak.
Graduation is up there too. If it was the last decade.
Yeah, I think if it was like 2010, then like absolutely.
But nah, I'm gonna always love this music. And I guess also it makes a difference to me that the reason why people don't like Kanye West is more related to rhetoric than actions, in the sense of, I know why I'm never gonna listen to R. Kelly again.
Yeah.
He's done stuff that is reprehensible, despicable, gross, disgusting.
And some people still don't care enough about that. Wild.
But for Kanye, it's just, you don't like what he's saying. And you are right.
Which,
what he's saying
which matter,
is wrong.
Which matters in a way.
But
this is someone who said slavery was a choice.
That's a wild statement.
Which is an extremely wild statement to say.
I am in no way going to defend that.
I don't know if you can.
I don't know if it's a reflection on a person if they choose to still listen to the music in the same way that listening to R. Kelly would be.
It's not the same. It's definitely not the same.
If you still listen to R. Kelly, you don't care about black girls. You're a gross human being. If you still listen to Kanye West, doesn't mean you're a Republican. Doesn't mean you think slavery is a choice. Just means that you can separate it. And it's less of a gross thing to separate. I can rationalize it to myself and not feel like less of a person or have less self-respect.
It's such a difficult line to just kind of toe with Kanye now, because as I mentioned before, people, especially like myself, who really were big fans of Kanye, they were extremely passionate.
Yeah.
So for him to say some of the stuff that he was saying,
like J. Cole fans.
Oh, we didn't even talk about J. Cole. We could save that for another one.
And I enjoy J. Cole. Don't make that sound like like I have shit to say about J. Cole. Because Revenge of the Dreamers 3 is amazing.
Yeah. It only took you a decade to get on the J. Cole
train. No, I'm on the J. Cole train for everything except Born Sinner.
Sideline Story, which was basically like his mixtapes with like a few singles.
I don't hate it. Yeah, no, I don't think I was into the intricacies of good rap albums at that point in my life. sounds wild.
That sounds like such a weird thing to say.
It sounded like a backhanded thing. But no, I wasn't analyzing albums back then. You were just listening to music.
Yeah.
When Born Sinner came, I felt like I had a certain grasp on my appreciation and understanding of hip hop, and that album is just not for me.
Yeezus was more so
in the moment.
Oh yeah,
yes. I remember me and you.
Yes,
and we went with a few people to the it was the New Slaves. Projections.
Yeah,
that was a moment.
That was a moment.
And I think the hype of that made me appreciate the album more than I do now in hindsight.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Music doesn't have to be timeless. Some stuff can just be good in the moment.
That's basically how Drake's made himself this popular for the entirety of the decade.
I'm not mad at it.
In the case of Kanye, he's found a way to put up like timeless music. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of his later stuff might not have that same feel.
But
I think albums like
For the most part, up until Jesus is King, I don't see him having necessarily misses. And even Jesus King, to be fair.
Ye's a miss.
I don't consider Ye an album. It's like six, seven songs.
It's something he put out. It's an album.
An EP. It could be throwaways.
It's an album. It's still a miss. A miss is a miss.
It wasn't a shot, is my point.
He missed.
He didn't shoot.
And the fact that you're not, even if you don't consider it a shot, that's still some kind of strike against Kanye, because he still put out something.
Yeah, but if you... When someone,
that's still just kind of like artists, whatever, just there.
When artists throw out Lucy's, I don't hold it to the same regard that I'm going to hold your project.
The thing is that there was some hype around Ye, which is still considered an album. It's not a mixtape.
Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't be considered an album.
Just because of its length?
Yeah, I would say so. Because of the length, because of the amount of tracks, I know there's a minimum standard for like iTunes and Spotify and stuff, but I'm not going based off that. But something that short, I can't consider a full project. That's just me, I guess.
I guess so. But yeah.
Or it could just be that I completely forgot about Ye when I made my first
statement. But that's it. Like, Ye was such a forgettable project.
I mean, I don't. Okay. When I said that he had no misses, I completely forgot Ye existed.
But that's it. It's a miss. It's a total miss.
But Kitsy Ghost was decent.
It was all right.
It was all right in comparison to what he's put out. But I don't like necessarily the idea of judging artists based on themselves if what they make is still better than a lot of people.
Wait.
I can say it's not your best work.
Wait. Repeat that sentence again.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm going to have to clean it up. I need more of an example. So say Schoolboy Q. Crash Talk.
Yeah.
Isn't nearly as good as Blackface.
No.
But Crash Talk is better than a lot of people's albums.
Yes.
And so I'm not going to deride or feel negative in any way about what Crash Talk ended up being just because I know he can do better because he still did good.
Okay. Because the way you said that initial sentence, I was under the impression you were talking more about the person, less so much as like...
Oh, no, that's my fault.
The music. Yeah. So that's why I was like, wait a minute. That was a bit of a weird thing. That's why I had that cleared up.
I can see how taken out of context.
Yes.
Come across well.
Yeah. We had to run long for this one because... Yeah,
how long did we run?
Oh, like at least over like 40 minutes, I'm sure.
Ooh, we was talking.
Huh? We were talking, but I think for an album like this...
Yeah, it had to be.
You absolutely have to.
Damn right.
You have anything to plug before we wrap
plug,
up?
Plug, everybody, stream Tempo featuring Sunny, talented singer out of Philadelphia. Funny enough, Next Man is going to come out in January, also featuring Lucas Wolf, also out of Philadelphia. I've never been to Philadelphia, but it just so happens that...
You got to go.
That's where my musical ear gravitates to talent wise. And so look out for those. Support all of Lucius P. Thundercat music, and that's it pretty much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Joining us on the latest edition of the Album of the Decade podcast.
An absolute pleasure.
Special thanks to everyone who's taken part of the Album of the Decade podcast, and special thanks to you for listening to this entire episode all the way through. You made it all the way to the end. This show is produced and edited by Tom Zalatni as part of the Upford Network. You can find out all about the great shows on the network at upfordnetwork.com.
I'm Tom.
I'm Will.
And we're the hosts of Blasting Off Again, a Pokemon watch-through podcast brought to you by the Upford Network.
We've taken on the monumental task of watching through every episode of Pokemon, providing in-depth analysis of everybody's favorite 90s dogfighting cartoon.
We're asking the hard-hitting questions. Who's the real hero of this series?
Why do some of these episodes get banned?
Is Ash's treatment of his Pokemon abusive or just negligent?
Is Charizard completely justified in treating Ash like the worst trainer of all time?
Why don't more Pokemon have nipples?
Which Pokemon would make the best professional wrestler?
Is Farfetch'd your best option for Christmas dinner?
Who even is that Pokemon?
Are all cops bastards?
Wait, I thought this was a Pokemon podcast.
Anyway, tune in to Blasting Off Again on the Upward Network and wherever you find your podcasts.
We're blasting off again!
Ding!
If you're someone who interacts with kids, you're probably familiar with moments of being asked questions you're just not equipped to answer. Whether it's the old favorite, where do babies come from, or the nuances of discrimination, Rad Child Podcast has your back. Each episode, your host, Seth Day, leads a discussion about topics like race, disability, loss, gender, sexuality, and so much more. Our goal is to give grown-ups the tools to talk to kids about almost anything. So come give a listen. Rad Child Podcast, helping to raise a generation of open, compassionate, rad kids. Available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and just about anywhere else.